Okay, so hi, I'm Billy, and again, the talk will be on self-reported acceptance and preference for HPT or home-based HIV testing in heterosexuals living in high-risk areas. And I'm going to point out right away that that's high-risk areas in the domestic United States, particularly in here in New Orleans, Louisiana. So in order to make sure that I would go over time, I provided an outline of what my talk will be. And I'm going to spend a little time on sort of the background of HIV and the epidemic localized in Louisiana and in New Orleans particularly, talk about some home-based testing history and the study that we use to examine acceptance and preference for HBT here in New Orleans and what we found and potentially even some implications and discussion. So in the United States, there's more than a million people who are living with HIV/AIDS, estimated by the CDC, and around 50,000 or so new cases every year. Locally in Louisiana, there's more than 19,000 confirmed cases that have been reported to the health department of people who are currently living in Louisiana, and we typically remain well in the top five for both statewide HIV and AIDS case rates, and New Orleans and Baton Rouge both are also consistently ranked in the top five for metropolitan and statistical areas for both, for large areas. Unfortunately, as was just mentioned, a lot of people who are living with HIV don't actually know that they are infected, and the estimates have gone down from 25% or 1 in 4 to around 1 in 5 and now 1 in 6. People who are living who do not know their actual status. I remember 1 in 6 because 1 goes into 6, and the 16%. It's hard to do that. And those who are unaware of their status are thought to account for more than or around half of the new infections every year, which is problematic, furthermore, because more than half of people who are in the United States have never been tested for HIV. Traditionally, HIV testing is conducted through dedicated counseling and testing referral services. Those are going to be done by trained and dedicated counseling and testing staff at CBOs, community-based organizations, through outreach, venue-based or otherwise, or in clinical settings such as public health clinics or medical settings, and more commonly in emergency rooms or in other health-related settings. And the paradigm has kind of shifted from anonymous testing to confidential name-based testing, as well as with the advent of new technologies, we've gone from a lab-based testing procedure where we can have a rapid testing procedure and people can receive their results now even through potentially in many states multiple rapid tests and have a result returned to them during their session. I've got to have notes. One other approach though, in sort of contrast to the clinical or even the CBO-based counseling and testing, would be testing at home. This is something that was proposed much earlier in the epidemic, but has not really had wide acceptance. In 1996, the first commercially available mail-in HIV test screening or screening kits were made available. Initially, these were done by the individual collecting a dried blood spot. They would mail it to a laboratory, and then they would receive their results over the phone. Now the results are an oral swab, but the mail-in process still occurs for many of those procedures. You can buy them in the drugstore or what have you. But in 2013, the FDA approved the first in-home self-read HIV test. I'm not going to actually tell you what the name is because I don't want APHA to get me in trouble saying I'm promoting a technology. But certain, Google's your friend, and I don't have anything to disclose about owning a lot of stock in anybody. With any technology, there's some pros and cons, and a lot of people have talked about what the advantages and disadvantages are. These technologies have seen a lot more acceptance and use in particularly sub-Saharan Africa, and less so because of the only, 2013 FDA approval here in the United States. And I'm going to apologize because there's a good systematic review of some of those pros and cons by I'm apologizing both because I got the reference wrong, but I'm also going to mangle the name. Sabatasi, I think in 2013, that talks about some of these different kinds of advantages and pros and cons. Some of the pros are that it potentially could reach a wider audience of people who are not engaging in the current testing system or CBO or even emergency routine kind of procedures, and also that may be because of reduction of stigma surrounding both HIV or HIV testing, it's possible that reduction in travel barriers might, and even cost in some cases, might actually result from application of these technologies or some form of system that includes home-based testing. The cons, I've typically sorted out into concerns around testing issues, including people being unable or potentially misreading their result for a self-administered test, as well as lack of or potential missed opportunities for counseling, particularly for people who are found to be positive or who are negative but still engaging in risk behaviors, and there's a missed opportunity for prevention messaging. And sort of the other category I've heard are and have been documented are surveillance issues. One of which would be that these are not necessarily the fourth generation kinds of tests, the newest tests, which would be able to detect HIV infection earlier, particularly in the acute stage. These are still EIAs that are going to be sort of lagging behind in terms of the window period. And reporting failure, or the fact that people may or may not be willing to report their names or their results back to the person who provided the test or the health department and therefore enter the surveillance system and have an opportunity to engage in care or be linked into care. I have to do this because it's the only way I know where my jokes are. So the purpose here is that we thought that we would go ahead and look at some of the willingness to utilize these kinds of testing procedures in a sample of people who are living in high-risk areas here in New Orleans and ask them, would they actually take this kind of test, first of all, and second of all, find out whether or not they would actually be willing to report or disclose those results back to the people who provided them the test to them. And also explore some issues about what ways or methods that they would like to engage back into care if they were to find out that they were, or not back into, but into care in the first place, if they were found to be positive. So we did this through some additional questions that were administered through the National HIV Behavioral Surveillance System. NHBS is a CDC funded risk behavioral surveillance system that is administered in 21 cities currently, I believe, and it's an ongoing cyclical risk behavioral survey that looks at, in turn, the three high-risk populations, men who have sex with men, injection drug users, and heterosexuals who live in high-risk areas or areas of that are at risk for HIV and in high rates of poverty. And it does this in annual cyclical cycle. I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. And we assess over 500 individuals in those populations each year. For HET, or the heterosexual cycle, we look at or we map all the neighborhoods or really census tracts that are at that intersection of high risk for poverty and high risk for heterosexually transmitted HIV. So we map all the cases, identify what the neighborhoods are, and then we go out to those neighborhoods and we select and recruit a small number of seeds to use for the respondent-driven sampling technique. And I know somebody's going to talk about respondent-driven sampling in a minute, so I won't steal your thunder. But essentially, we take those seeds, we survey them, we provide them an HIV test, and then we provide them incentive to recruit peers. Up to five individuals we'll give an extra $10 to. And those peers then would come in. They're also surveyed, tested, and provided the opportunity to recruit five more friends, and they tell five friends, and they tell five friends. It's just like the shampoo commercial that nobody ever remembers because when I tell my students that they're too young. Those individuals then continue until the desired sample size is reached. That's around 500 people. And the eligibility for this particular cycle includes that they're 18 to 60 years of age, they're a resident in the metropolitan area, they can take the survey, and that they've had sex with a member of the opposite sex in the past 12 months. Everyone's administered they're provided a free HIV test, but they're also administered the NHBS instrument. That's the core survey. It's about 400 or so questions on HIV risk behavior, status, substance use behaviors, including injection behaviors, access and history of HIV testing utilization, and a number of other particular questions about service utilization. In addition, each site is offered the opportunity to include additional sort of local use questions that are on topics of importance. And one of the questions that we decided to include in particular related to this talk is, if a research study or a health department mailed you a free HIV test that you could read yourself at home, I think, would you take it? We had follow-up items on what their individual's desired means of returning the results and getting in treatment and care. And what we found was among the 470 people that were not known to be positive, or men who have sex with men, or injection drug users, and were predominantly male, or no, I'm sorry, were about half male, predominantly African-American, older, and with an income of under $20,000, or living with relatively low SES. What we found was that 85% of people were in fact willing to take a home-based test. So they responded, yes, they would take the test if we gave it to them. That was mailed by a health department or a research study. And so we tried to look at a logistic model to try to predict who would and would not be receptive to this particular technology, including age, race, sex, income, homelessness, insurance, testing history, condom use, and last sex. And what was interesting was that previous testing history was associated with an increased likelihood of acceptance, and so people who had tested before were about three times as likely to test to report that they would take this test, which was almost the reverse of what we thought, that people who had never tested might actually be more receptive. And that current homelessness was associated with a decreased likelihood of actually accepting this test. And you could also imagine that that makes a lot of sense, given that they may or may not have a current postal address to receive the test in the way that the question was asked. The most common among those additional 15%, the people who said that they would never do this or they wouldn't do this, we looked at some of the reasons why, and the most commonly occurring ones was again, they did not think that they were at risk. Relatively few people said they didn't trust their result, or they didn't trust the people who would have mailed it to them, though. So those may still be outstanding barriers. When we look at whether or not they would return the result, 55% said that they would return the result to the people who mail it to them or people who provided the test, either through, we collapse it down from over the phone, by mail, in person, or if you paid me, which, you know, some people said that. That may sound like an inappropriate or a bad number, 55%, but consider that the remaining 44% said that the method that they would return the result was directly to their doctor, and only 6% said that they would never reveal the result to anybody. Furthermore, 99% of them, everybody except those six people, said that they would actually dial or call a number to follow up and have their results explained to them or talk about what they actually found. The factor that was that actually was associated with unwillingness to return the result was female gender. So women were less likely to say that they would actually return the result, which also kind of makes sense given that they may have more frequent visits to their physician. So in summary, I probably missed a joke here somewhere because there's no room on the lectern. There were substantially higher rates of self-reported acceptance, and when we factor in the fact that people would be willing to discuss the result with their doctor, willingness to return the results. So there were opportunities for linkage to care, as well as surveillance, not intervention, but actually entry into the surveillance system. And I forgot to say this before, I was going to move the bullet, but this is really critical given that one of the assumptions of the seek, test, and treat paradigm and the treatment as prevention model is that we have eventually 100% detection and testing, and that everyone moves in directly or immediately into antiretroviral use in order to reduce or move the epidemic into an elimination phase. And then the final thing. See, that's bad when I can't read my own joke. This is a self-report kind of a procedure, and I think that the next step would be to actually be able to provide home-based testing to individuals either free or through some other prevention-funded potentially mechanism, and that it might be a good tool for that. Although currently there really is only one thing, only one program that I'm aware of. CDC has actually got iTest at home thing that's targeted directly towards men who have sex with men. But that's an example of a program that might actually be useful.